Hi, this is Sarah with the News Gazette, dated Friday, August 21st, 2026. We'll begin today's reading with the story on the front page entitled Concerns Crop Up After Heavy Rains. Excess moisture can give rise to mold, plant disease, soil damage, by Luke Taylor. Champagne. Heavy rains may seem like the best thing a farmer could ask for, but a flood at the wrong time can prove disastrous for a variety of reasons. Chris Ayler, sales agronomist for Ayler Brothers Company, said their fields near Thomasboro had standing water from Saturday through Tuesday, and there isn't much to be done about the side effects of 4 days of submerged roots. You're along for the ride, just knowing where the crops are at, knowing which fields are vulnerable to potential diseases, stock rots, so on and so forth, and just prioritizing those and mitigating any lost, Ayler said. In the Villa Grove area, Adam Watson said his farm was hit with small amounts of flooding, but the water seemed to just fill in previously damaged spots. As long as there weren't any more major downpours like this past weekend, when parts of the county saw up to 11 inches of rain, he expects to harvest on schedule. If you have flooding, the soybeans are probably going to take it a lot worse just because they're a shorter crop, and the beans would be underwater compared to the corn, Watson said. But they're both going to be affected, because if the water stands on soil for too long, it takes the oxygen out of the soil. Mark Flugmacher, who farms near Thomasboro, had a similar situation to Watson, with flooding filling in places it had created during heavy June rains. He lost acreage then and is worried about the fallout of August's flooding, even after direct damage was already done. It was the craziest year I've ever seen, where I've had two record months of rain in June and August, he said. I'm more concerned about the wetness and the humidity in beans as far as disease pressure coming up. The reason beans specifically have Flugmacher concerned is pretty simple. The plants create a canopy that can trap wetness and humidity even after standing water has mostly drained away or evaporated. That small amount of water could cause disease or mold and hurt the product significantly if it gets bad. I can try to control what I can control, and if there's one thing I can't control, it's the weather, Flugmacher said. You just gotta kind of roll with the punches. He said his harvest has already been pushed back around 2 weeks as they wait for the fields and plants to dry out. Ayler was able to break down some of the science regarding how flooding can affect corn and beans individually. He said the immediate concern for corn is significant loss in nitrogen content around the roots at the point in the season when the plants need it most. As the corn plant shifts energy more into reproduction, making a full ear of seeds, it will redirect that needed nitrogen from other parts of the plant. In order to fill out that ear, the plant will start to cannibalize itself. And when it cannibalizes itself, it's pulling nutrients from leaf tissue and stalk tissue. And when it robs it from the stalk tissue, you open yourself up to stalk rots, Ayler said. The concern at that point would be lodging, plants falling over, and harvestability. Lodging is when the corn stalk breaks below the ear after the ear reaches maturity, making it more difficult to harvest and potentially reducing yield. Heavy rains could also result in excess water trapped around corn ears, leading to mold. Soybeans, Ayler said, don't have the need corn does for nitrogen, because rhizobia bacteria in the soil interacts with the plant to provide it. However, that bacteria needs oxygen to survive, which is pretty hard to get if it's drowning in several inches of rainwater. Ayler also said colder weather can result in white mold in the fields, which he's already seen popping up during some recent cool streaks. There's potential that it could get worse or we could start to see it in fields that weren't showing it prior, he said. Ayler said the next 10 to 14 days will likely reveal how that's going to turn out. Image shows a field covered in standing water that was seen on Monday in fields at Champaign County Roads 500 East and 3000 North west of Fisher. Image on the front page shows new University of Illinois students decked out in free orange t-shirts, swaying side to side during the Sights and Sounds welcome party Thursday night at Geese Memorial Stadium in Champaign. Rob Locates. Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District. Another developer bows out of Illinois Terminal Project. Janet Wiersema. Champaign. In 2023, the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District announced that it was in talks with a new development partner on an expansion project for its Illinois Terminal in downtown Champaign after previous collaborators left the endeavor. 3 years later, that second developer, Royce Witt Downtown, is also dropping out of the project. "There really is just one singular reason," said MTD Managing Director Carl Natt, "and that it was just too challenging to close the financial gap for Royce Witt." He added that the firm made a Herculean effort to make the financing work, but the current development environment and the specifics of a project made it more expensive than developing a property that's more of a blank slate. Colin Carlier with Royce Witt Downtown confirmed that financing was the main issue. "As a result of the firm's departure, the project will no longer include apartments. Instead," Nat said, "the scope of work is now just the expansion and rehabilitation of the Illinois Terminal, which will include a parking deck." The MTD had previously planned to partner with Core Spaces on the expansion project. That company, along with local businessman Hans Grotelution, presented a proposal called The Yards that included several other components across 11 acres, including a sports arena. The idea was introduced before the COVID-19 pandemic. However, the arena and other parts of the project became more uncertain after the University of Illinois, also a partner on the project at one time, announced in May 2022 that it no longer planned to add a Division I men's ice hockey program. Although the joint development aspect of the project has been removed due to market conditions, construction costs, site constraints, and financing challenges outside MTD's control, the project's fundamental transportation purpose, need, and public benefits remain unchanged, Ashley McLaughlin, the MTD's external affairs director, wrote in a recent report. "Strong collaboration continues between MTD, the city, and private development partners pursuing complementary investments in the area." Nat said there could be some ancillary developments within a quarter-mile radius of the terminal. "We have a good relationship with Royce Witt," he said. "We'd like them to continue to pursue additional developments in the area. We think that they'd be good partners in that regard." Royce Witt Downtown is made of Omni Development President Dennis Witt, Royce Holdings Principal Mike Royce, and Carlier, who is CEO of Royce and Brinkmeyer Apartments. The trio are also partners on the Inman. Carlier said in an interview last month that the group is looking into the possibility of developing an ice arena downtown, with Plan A being land bound by Walnut, Logan, Market, and Marshall Streets that was previously targeted for the Yards. The MTD's board will vote Wednesday on whether to approve a $5.76 million architecture and engineering contract with Stantec, Inc. on the terminal expansion project. The amount includes a 5% contingency and could be subject to change, McLaughlin said. Some 80% of the contract will be funded with federal dollars and 20% will be covered by local funds. Image shows Carl Natt, Managing Director of the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District, explaining plans for an expansion to the Illinois Terminal to Terminal Director Josh Dome as they look at the site from the fourth floor window on January 15, 2024 in Champaign. Robin Schultz, The News Gazette. History. Area history. In 1926, the University of Illinois is spending $75,000 on pavement and walks at Memorial Stadium. The big boardwalk, which had extended from the West Ramp to First Street, is being removed and will be relayed from First Street to the Illinois Central tracks. The boardwalk will be replaced by concrete terraces and steps, which will connect to a new 36-foot-wide sidewalk on 1st Street. The 4th Street sidewalk will be widened to 36 feet. Both sidewalks will then be connected by a new 36-foot-wide sidewalk on the south side of the stadium. In 1976, some Sydney residents filed another suit Friday, asking for a court order to bar the busing of students from Sydney to Philo. The suits are a result of the Unit 7 school board's decision earlier this year to close both the Sydney and Sadorus grade schools for economic reasons. Sydney's K-6 students are to be bused to Philo, while 7th and 8th graders will be bused to Tolono. In 2011, park district officials in Urbana are working around new obstacles to complete planning for an aquatic center at Crystal Lake Park. They still believe, however, that they'll be able to begin construction next spring and open the facility in May 2013. In recent months, the park district has learned that planned features at the pool wouldn't be approved by the State Department of Public Health, and that an aging sanitary sewer system in North Urbana will require a more expensive filter system at the aquatic center. On the other hand, the park district has new hopes of getting a $400,000 state grant to allow it to meet the original $7.7 million budget target for the center. International history. Today's highlight. On August 21, 1831, Nat Turner launched a violent slave rebellion in Virginia, resulting in the deaths of at least 55 white people. Scores of black people were killed in retribution after the rebellion, and Turner was later executed. On this date, in 1858, the first of seven debates took place between Illinois senatorial contenders Abraham Lincoln and Stephen Douglas. Top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying up with on Fridays, we'll spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversations in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing ltaylor@news-gazette.com. For Holly Justice from the 48 Inn in Decatur, bartending is a way to kill two birds with one stone. I'm at work, but I'm also having a good time, she said. It's my social hour, and I get to interact with people and do all the fun things, but I get to stay sober. Justice says sometimes folks think it's strange to see a sober bartender, but that's her preference. It can be pretty entertaining to watch folks party, but she admits sometimes it's like being the only adult in the room. You gotta treat them like they're daycare kids. You gotta go home today, but you can go back tomorrow, Justice said. For all her teasing, Justice enjoys a great group of regulars at 48 Inn. It's to the point that if someone walks in and she doesn't already know their food or drink order, it's out of the ordinary. She's worked at 48 Inn for over 3 years now, but has 12 years of bartending experience at locations around the area. She recommends the inn for great food, highlighting the new chicken wrap as a must-try, and live music on Friday nights. Live music events will also start to pop up on Sunday afternoons going forward. Having just graduated with an associate's degree in health information technology, Justice is planning to make bartending part-time be a secondary job as she moves into a new career. I don't think I'll ever quit doing this, she says. U.S. government, $40 trillion in debt. Bipartisan group forecasts nation will reach $41.1 trillion statutory debt limit by mid-summer 2027 at latest. Washington. The national debt surpassed a record $40 trillion on Wednesday, a staggering milestone as defense costs, social programs like Social Security and Medicare, and interest on the burgeoning deficit make up an enormous share of federal spending. The milestone figure was recorded just 5 months after the U.S. hit a record $39 trillion debt in March. It reached $38 trillion 5 months before that in October. The unprecedented $40 trillion figure highlights competing administration priorities, from boosting defense spending that the U.S. relies on to carry out President Donald Trump's almost six-month-old war in Iran, to lowering the cost of gas and groceries. Kush Desai, a White House spokesman, said the Trump administration has been focused on slashing waste, fraud, and abuse in federal spending while accelerating economic growth to get America's debt-to-GDP ratio trending in the right direction. However, experts say the exploding debt and the latest record milestone are already affecting Americans' pocketbooks by raising borrowing costs for things like mortgages and cars, lowering wages from businesses that have less money available to invest, and creating more expensive goods and services. If we want to improve our living standards today and for the next generation, now is the time for lawmakers to put our nation on a more affordable and sustainable path, said Michael A. Peterson, CEO of the Peter G. Peterson Foundation, a think tank focused on U.S. fiscal challenges. The debt has exploded over several presidential administrations, as the nation's leaders spend more money than it collects in taxes. In recent memory, the multi-year COVID-19 pandemic shut down much of the U.S. economy, where the federal government borrowed heavily during President Trump's first term and under former President Joe Biden to stabilize the economy and support a recovery. More government spending was approved after Trump signed Republicans' tax cut and spending legislation into law last year. Advocates for a balanced budget also warn that the long-term trend of borrowing more and paying more in interest will force Americans to face tougher fiscal trade-offs ahead. The federal debt is already raising the cost of living and choking out other spending and investment, threatening our economy and Americans' long-term prosperity, said Margaret Spellings, president and CEO of the Bipartisan Policy Center. Our current fiscal trajectory is plainly unsustainable, and that's a best-case scenario. AI disruption, a recession, global war, or any number of other events could quickly push us over the edge from a challenge into a full-blown crisis, Spellings said in a statement. The U.S. is subject to a statutory debt limit, or a limit to federal borrowing, which Congress has the authority to set, adjust, or abolish. The Bipartisan Policy Center estimates that the U.S. will most likely reach the $41.1 trillion debt limit sometime between late this winter and midsummer of 2027, requiring Congress to again vote on raising or suspending it. The country's fiscal position stands as the worst among our other developed countries, according to recent data analysis from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. Image shows President Donald Trump speaking to the press Wednesday next to ongoing construction of a helipad on the south lawn of the White House in Washington, D.C. Jim Watson, via Getty Images. Lindsey Clancy murder trial. Protesters. Mental health system failed murder defendant. Plymouth, Massachusetts. Hundreds of supporters of Lindsey Clancy, many wearing pink clothing emblazoned with phrases such as believe, she needed help, and peace for Lindsey, gathered Thursday outside the courthouse where she is on trial in the killings of her three children. Several of the 300 women and a few men said Clancy's story resonated with them and that they wanted to raise awareness about how the mental health system treats women. Clancy's lawyer does not dispute that she killed the children, but says she should not be held criminally responsible because she was mentally ill. The live-streamed trial has sparked massive discussions online and has brought attention to postpartum psychosis, a rare mental illness that Clancy's attorney, Kevin Reddington, said she had that is linked to the stress, sleep deprivation, and hormonal changes that follow childbirth. Reddington said she also has bipolar disorder. After strangling her children, Clancy jumped from a second-story window and remains paralyzed from the waist down. Reddington said Clancy repeatedly sought help. She turned to multiple outpatient providers, tried various drugs they prescribed, called a suicide hotline, went to an emergency room, and even checked herself into a psychiatric hospital. Prosecutors say the former labor and delivery nurse planned the January 24, 2023 killings and contrived to get her husband out of the house by sending him to pick up medicine for one of their children and dinner for the family. They have also questioned the seriousness of her suicide attempt, and witnesses have testified that Clancy wouldn't always take prescribed medications. Thursday's rally was the first time during the nearly month-long trial that supporters have come out in such large numbers. "Women are being dismissed, neglected, and ignored when we speak up," said April Vincent, a 52-year-old paralegal from Providence, Rhode Island. "We're scared because nobody takes us seriously." The women stood silently for more than an hour ahead of Thursday's proceedings, where a chaplain called by the defense testified about visiting Clancy in the hospital after the killings. At the sight of Reddington outside the courthouse, the crowd broke into applause. Rally organizer Renee Kimball implored the crowd to trust that Reddington has Lindsay's fight. Toward the end of their rally, supporters formed a circle, said the Lord's Prayer, held up their arms, and formed hearts with their hands. Some held flags from different countries to show that the support for Clancy was global. Clancy, 36, has pleaded not guilty to murder in the deaths of Kaylin, Dawson, and Cora Clancy, who ranged from 8 months to 5 years old. Researchers estimate that postpartum psychosis, which is more serious and less common than postpartum depression, afflicts 1 to 2 per 1,000 women after delivery. Jean Zaborski, 72, a retired nurse from Rockland, Massachusetts, said she hopes the case raises awareness about postpartum health. She and many others at the rally said they had been following the trial almost daily. "It's very sad," Zaborski said. "I am a mother. I'm a grandmother. I have a sister who had problems after birth, and it's just very sad. I hope Lindsay gets the care she needs and deserves, and other women will come together like we did today." In court, Sheila Kavanaugh, a chaplain at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, testified that when she first visited Clancy after the killings, she was unconscious. By January 31, 2023, Clancy was conscious and no longer connected to a ventilator, Kavanaugh said, but her emotional state was very neutral, a flat effect. Image shows supporters of murder defendant Lindsay Clancy cheering as sheriff's vehicle passed by Thursday outside the Plymouth Courthouse in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Stuart Cahill, Boston Herald. Midwest Health Warning. Alfalfa sprouts linked to several cases of food poisoning. New York. Minnesota health officials are warning consumers not to eat certain brands of alfalfa sprouts that have been tied to an unusual outbreak involving different disease-causing bacteria. Officials say 23 people in Minnesota have become ill with either E. coli or salmonella infections, with two of them hospitalized. Three had salmonella, and one of them also had a strain of E. coli bacteria called STEC0168H8. Other people were sickened with a different version of E. coli called STEC0103H25. 13 had yet another strain, STEC0026H11. Wisconsin investigators have identified another 18 cases of illness tied to alfalfa sprouts, Minnesota officials said. The illnesses are being linked to alfalfa sprouts produced by Everything Sprouts, a Minnesota grower, and sold under the Kelco and Everything Sprouts brands to restaurants and grocery stores, Minnesota officials said. Minnesota investigators say they are working with Wisconsin and federal health officials to pinpoint the source and scope of contamination. Food poisoning outbreaks tend to be defined by one type of germ. It's very unusual to have two bugs, said Bill Marler, a Seattle lawyer who has worked on food safety cases for decades. But it's not surprising that alfalfa sprouts might be the culprit, he added. It's easy for the seeds to harbor contaminants. It's difficult to clean them, and it's easy for contaminants to spread when they're grown in warm water, Marler said. Shiga toxin-producing E. coli, or STEC, can cause stomach cramps and bloody diarrhea. Infections can lead to hemolytic uremic syndrome, a severe complication that involves acute kidney failure and other severe problems. Salmonella poisoning can cause diarrhea, fever, severe vomiting, dehydration, and stomach cramps. Layla Navidi, the Minnesota Star Tribune. U.S. military. Aircraft carrier arrives to relieve Lincoln, Washington. The Asia-based USS George Washington aircraft carrier is now operating in the Middle East, the U.S. military said Thursday, relieving a long-deployed carrier following reports of mental health challenges and supply shortages aboard while it was supporting the Iran war. U.S. Central Command, which oversees military operations in the Middle East, said on social media that the carrier arrived in the region Wednesday. It was not clear when the USS Abraham Lincoln would arrive back in the U.S. or whether it would make a port stop along the way, but the journey takes just over a month. The Washington arrived as concerns have grown about the Lincoln's lengthy deployment, which has included a record-setting uninterrupted time at sea of more than 250 days, and about reports of crew stress and poor mental health, as well as supply shortages, including food and hygiene products. Several Democratic lawmakers have pressed the Department of Defense for accountability over conditions aboard the Lincoln, which Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth has said were completely misrepresented. Extended deployments of carriers wear on service members who are away from home for long periods and increase strain on the ship and its equipment. Daybook, Almanac. There are 132 days left in the year. Notable birthdays include Rock and Roll Hall of Famer James Burton is 87. Singer Jackie DeShannon is 85. Film director Peter Weir is 82. Football Hall of Famer Willie Lanier is 81. Actor Loretta Devine is 77. Two-time Heisman Trophy winner Archie Griffin is 72. Actor Kim Cattrall is 70. Rock musician Serge Tankian, System of a Down, is 59. Actor Carrie Ann Moss is 59. Google co-founder Sergey Brin is 53. Singer Kellis is 47. TV personality Brody Jenner is 43. Olympic gold medal sprinter Usain Bolt is 40. Country singer Casey Musgraves is 38. Soccer player Robert Lewandowski is 38. Comedian, singer, filmmaker Bo Burnham is 36. Actor Dallas Liu is 25. Thank you for reading with us, and stay tuned for part 2 of the News Gazette, August 21st, 2026.